I'm going to tell you just a little bit about this class. Of all of the classes that you can take, this is probably going to be one that's the most beneficial for you. Because what we want you to do is help you understand is that everybody that lives has to go through the grieving process when you lose someone that you love. If you will turn to the back page, I don't know why it got all screwed up, but I did it. It was not even my secretary. It was me. There's a definition there that I want you to read with me. It's called the definition of loss. Loss is when we lose hopes and dreams that are core to our existence. Loss is when we lose hopes and dreams that are core to our existence. Okay? And when we lose our hopes and our dreams, realize that what that does is that it stops your progression. It stops you moving forward. Think about it with me for just a minute, would you please? How many of you really dreamed about your spouse dying and how wonderful it's going to be and how exciting that you're going to be and all of the wonderful times that are going to be happening as soon as that happens? None of us have dreams like, well, we have nightmares, but that's not the same as these dreams. And your hope means to look forward with anticipation to something you believe you can have, which in my mind says I'm looking to the future with excitement to something I believe I can have. And I don't know a whole lot of folks that are looking forward to their spouse passing away so they can be excited about it. And so when you have loss, you lose hopes and dreams that are core to your existence. Back 4 years ago, I was asked to do a grieving group. Okay, by one of the mortuaries in town. I just moved to Utah, had practiced in Alabama for a time after graduate school, and had moved to Utah and run into a mortician and his wife, and they said, Kent, we remember you from way back when, and we want you to come, and why don't you do a group for our mortuary? And so I ran a group, and the mortician's wife then said, Kent, we really want you to do this for us. We're not going to pay you anything to do it, but we want you to come do it, and it'll help you build your practice. And then she said, I want you to go off to grieving school and be certified as a grieving counselor. So I did. I went over to Colorado, and I went through the Kubler-Ross Grieving School for therapists, and I learned how to be a grieving counselor, and I came home, and 17 years later, my mother passed away. And what I learned, brothers and sisters, is that I knew nothing about grieving, even though I was being a grieving counselor for 17 years. It caught me totally by surprise. That's where I went back to Kubler and Ross and says, hey, wait a minute, these are all the things you taught me. You guys never prepared me for any of this, and that's where I learned that all we're doing here is teaching you how to help people who are dying grieve, because we don't really teach you how to help people who have their spouses died learn how to grieve. How's that? So I wrote that definition of loss when I lost my mother. I come to understand that my mother had been a part of everything that I'd done in life, and I understood that my mother was also, in my head, something that was going to happen for forever, that I always wanted her there. Think about with your spouse, okay? Realize that you wanted to have them with you forever. You were going to grow old together. You were going to watch your kids get married. You're going to watch them go on missions. You're going to watch them have babies and have, so you've got all these little grandbabies together. And then you were going to go off into the sunset and serve 13 missions. And then, like Susan and I, we want to do a Louise and Thelma and Louise off the dam as soon as we hit 78. And I don't know why Susan wants to die at 78, but that's what she says. Okay? But that's what I'm saying is you lose hopes and dreams. The next part of the definition says the definition for grieving. Grieving is the process that we go through. And some of you say, this is the process that God is dragging me through the knothole through, because it's not a fun process. It's a process that you go through that helps you let go of hopes and dreams that you can no longer have. I do believe that your spouses are with you when God needs them to be with you. Okay, they're not always there. They have one spirit. They can only be in one place at a time, and they have other things that they have to do. But when you're in need of them and God says, yep, they're right there by your side. On special days, special occasions, I know that they're there. I know that they're there. Now, so it's the process that helps you let go of old hopes and dreams. but it's also the process that helps you establish new hopes and dreams that you can now attain. Okay? So you're going to go out and you're going to live life and you're going to have new hopes and dreams, and you'll be able to obtain those hopes and dreams. And that's what we want to do. Now, the next two sentences are very important because the grieving process is an unlearned process. There is nothing in life that teaches you how to grieve until you're in it. There's nothing that could prepare you. Even though some of you may have known that your spouse was going to pass away, there's nothing that life does that prepares you to grieve. It just doesn't happen. Okay? And you get stuck because it's something that I don't know how to do. And that's why we come to conferences. That's why you ask people. That's why you have friends that now are going through the same thing that you're going through, and you actually teach one another what you're doing. And that's a wonderful, wonderful thing to have things like this, and it's wonderful to have friendships that you guys can have to help you walk that walk that you have to walk. And I want to say, you have to walk it. My father, okay, when my mother passed away, 3 days after my mother passed away, my father came to my sister after he'd had Sunday dinner with her. Actually, it was 3 days after we buried my mother. And my father came to my sister and he says, I think I've grieved long enough. And I think I'm going to start dating next week. Okay, now, my father went on, and 7 months later, my father remarried. Okay, he was 87, and I could tell you a funny story about that, but I won't. But he was 87, and he didn't grieve. He never grieved. A year later, I got a call by my stepmother. Something's wrong with your father. He will not quit crying. And all he wants to do is isolate. And he never hangs around me. And he's gone all the time. Guess what I had to do with my father? Okay? I had to go get my father. And I had to say, Dad, let's talk. And we spent hours and hours and hours and hours and hours talking so that my father went through the grieving process. Now, the next part of the grieving process is the hardest part. Because what I want you to know, brothers and sisters, is that grieving is a feeling process, not a thinking process. It's a feeling process, not a thinking process. I want you to understand you can't think your way through it. Okay? You can't think your way through grieving. Now, here's why. You're going to go down this road, and those of you that are logical, and you're going to try to think your way through it, and you're going to have your mind say, okay, logically, why did he have to die? Why did she have to die? And then there's going to be people in your ward and in your neighborhood that are going to say, God needed them. They needed them really, really badly, and so he's called them home. And there's just so much work on the other side that he has to do. And then you're going to be really ticked off at God and at your husband or your wife, because you know what? That doesn't make sense, because I needed him here, and so did my kids need him, and who's more important? Them people on the other side or me? And you're going to go through this battle in your head, and how much sense is that going to make to you? Okay, it's not. And so grieving then is a feeling process, and as soon as you can understand that, and the sad thing is we got two guys here, and we got the rest of the women and the guys, they knew what was happening, so sorry. Okay, because we make you feel. Guys don't like feelings. We don't want to feel them. And women, what I find is that they like them in the beginnings, but after we've done this over and over and over again, and now I'm into it the 8th and the 9th and the 10th month, and I'm still crying, guess what we don't like? We don't like those feelings. And so the process today that I have learned that helps people is we have to go through the process, but what I want you to be able to do, brothers and sisters, is go through this process in smaller increments instead of the large increments of time. So we go through grieving smaller increments, and it gives your mind and your body and your spirit a chance to rest in between the grieving. How's that grab you? Okay? So let me introduce to you some concepts. Look at that. They snuck in here and I didn't even see it. Okay, so let's get you going so that you know what's happening. Okay, the very first thing that you need to do and learn here is that we have trauma. Is there anybody here that did not go through trauma when you lost your spouse? Look around, everybody. I want you on the front row. I want you to look back. There is not one person raising their hand. We go through trauma when we lose our spouse. It's traumatic. When we have trauma, it causes stress. Anyone here not experienced stress at the loss of your spouse? Again, I want you to notice. Everybody here, we've had stress. The stress is extreme. It's not this little bitty stress. It's the most stress. Yes?
I can't see the board. There's a glare.
Do we have anybody up in the booth?
It's on the back under the page. Oh, is it? Oh, it's on the back.
It is on the back. Yes, it is on the back. So look at your back. So look at the back of your page. It's there. When we have that stress, because Heavenly Father loves you and He wants you to survive, He makes your minds numb. Anybody here have short-term memory loss? Anybody here not have short-term memory loss? Okay, literally what happens is it goes in and it kills the dopamine in your front lobes of your brain. Seriously, I'm telling you. Nope, this is what happens. Now, the experts tell us, okay, that if, here's your brain, okay, if you didn't have that, what would happen is that all the trauma that you experience in life would go in and your brain would put it all in one spot and it would remember it over and over and over and over and over again. And because of that, it would kill you. God doesn't want you to die when you have stress. He doesn't want you to have die when you have trauma. So what happens is it goes in and it scatters those memories all around your brain. That's what happens. When our minds go numb, it creates triggers. Okay? Triggers are emotional memories created by your senses. What are your senses? Touch? Sight? Smell? Sound? And smells? Taste? There was only supposed to be five, and we got a couple extra. We call them the same thing. But literally what happens then is you have these memories that have been created in your mind. And they create triggers. For example, you can be driving down the road, and you can see a truck or a car that looks like your spouse's, and a trigger goes off, and oh, there they are. And now what that does is that creates anxiety. Okay? You can be walking by somebody in the grocery store and they wear the same cologne or the same perfume as your spouse, and guess what'll happen? A trigger. You can be driving down the road and you can hear a song and there'll be a trigger. We have Mother's Day coming up. And guess what it's going to trigger? All kinds of memories. Okay? When we're in that mode, okay, we misread life's cues. Okay, when we're misreading those life's cues, guess what it creates? For those of you that have been through a Mother's Day, how stressful was Mother's Day?
Just like any other day. I got to do all the work.
Was like any other day?
Yeah, I got to do all the work.
Wasn't it worse?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was. It was worse. How many have gone through a first Christmas? What's it felt like? It was awful, terrible, and horrible. But before your spouse died, what was it like? It was great. Okay? It was positive. When we miss these life's cues, again, now it sends us through this cycle, and around we go. When we're in anxiety mode, okay, going back to the last session here, realize that what it does is it bumps our heart rate over 92 beats a minute. And because my heart is racing and the adrenaline is in my system, it makes me go into fight, flight, or freeze mode. Okay? Okay, fight comes out as anger. I can spell. Flight comes out as I just want to run away. And freeze says I'm going to go zone out. Okay? So, going back, like with the zone out, boy, I wrote horrible. When I'm in the zone out mode, you know, you're going to go sit and watch your favorite sitcom. You're going to play Candy Crush for hours. You're going to go sit in front of a tub of cookie dough. Okay, you're going to go do things so that you don't have to think and you just zone out. We don't want you to do any of those things. What we want you to do is we want you to go and start thriving and survive, not surviving, but start thriving. So now what I'd like you to do is I'm going to let you go with that, and now I want to teach you some concepts on how to get out of that. Okay, the concept is this. When, and there's a lot of folks that have trouble with this, so just hang with me for a minute, okay? That when you lose your spouse to death, that you lose your agency. Anybody have a problem with that? Okay, you lose your agency because it's not your choice. That's why we lose our agency, is because we've lost that choice. If it was your choice, realize that you'd rather be here today, not in a grieving, you know, conference, but here in a marriage conference. You'd rather be out mowing the lawn or working in the yard or watching a soccer game with your kids, with your spouse. That would be your choice, not to be here at a grieving conference. When you lose your agency, you have to know that you have to take it back. You have to take it back. And that's a weird concept for people. Is that, they don't, first of all, you don't realize you lost your agency, and then how on earth am I going to take my agency back? Years ago, I was asked by the church to go back to do training and work with sexually abused children. And for 17 years of my profession, I worked with almost 99% of nothing but sexually abused children and teenagers and women who had been raped. Okay? Around 17 years of doing that, I became very, very depressed. All right? And I would put my happy face on and fake it, and I'd go to work, and then I'd come home and I'd take my happy face off, and I'd put it in the drawer, I'd crawl into bed and pull the covers up over my head and just hope that I could sleep through the night. And I did that month after month after month after month until my wife said, honey, you either go get some therapy or I'm going to commit you. And I didn't do either because of the problem that I had, and that's called pride. And what I developed and what I come to understand, because Heavenly Father teaches me, because that's what Heavenly Father wants us to do, is to be taught, but He doesn't want us to be victims, is my mother, my sweet mother, back when I was a child, taught us as children that when you get stuck in life, you go back to basics. Now, the basics of the Allen Hamp family was this, is you read your scriptures and you say your prayers. When you get older, you go to the temple and you fast and you pray and you serve people. That was the basics for the Allens. And so guess what Kent Allen did? I went back to my basics. Now, any of you been reading the Book of Mormon as you're going through your depression and your life that's terrible, horrible, and rotten? I want you to know that I went through the Book of Mormon first. I found that everybody in the Book of Mormon was depressed. I can go into the Book of Mormon and I can show you, brothers and sisters, where every prophet in the Book of Mormon was depressed. Okay, Father Lehi and his sweet little wife, they couldn't get out of bed. Do you remember? They were so depressed they couldn't get out of bed. Nephi, go read 2 Nephi over through it. You know, oh, what a wretched man I am. And it talks about how every night he'd wake up the next morning and his pillow would be wet from his tears. Okay, I can show you. You know, you think about poor old Mormon. It's he's there watching everybody get killed. And then Moroni wandering around and I'm a horrible person, and I don't know what God's going to do with me because I'm so alone and it's so horrible and terrible. Do you get the picture? They're there. And I went through the Book of Mormon, and I'm thinking, this is making me more depressed. And then I went into the Doctrine and Covenants, and in the Doctrine and Covenants, and I was going to look it up today before I did. I can't even remember what verse and chapter it is. But I'm reading about light and truth. Don't know. But what it says is that the light will chase away the darkness. And guess what? I had a mini vision. Did anybody ever have a mini vision? It was a little daydream. That's all it was. I didn't attribute it as a vision, but I'm calling it a mini vision because I went back to when I was a little child. I was 5, 6 years old. I'm in my bedroom. It's lightning. It's thundering. It's raining horribly outside, and I'm screaming for my mother. And my mother comes, and there's a light outside my door, and she'd flipped it on. And as she opened the door, guess what happened to the darkness of my room? It went away. And the light chased away the darkness. Now, what I'm going to do is I'm going to teach you right now how to chase the darkness away. Okay, step number one. It's on your page. Okay, step number one says, recognize when your agency is gone. It's very, very simple to do, brothers and sisters. Tune into your body. Tune into your body. A couple of years ago, I had a young lady that came to see me because she had been raped. Okay, she was a little 24-year-old, been married for 6 months. She's out jogging the trails of the little community that she lived in, and some bad guy jumped out of the bushes. He put a gun to her head, drug her into the bushes, and he raped her 3 times. When I asked her, how does it make you feel when you think about what happened? She said to me, it makes me feel crappy. Now, when you think about your spouse passing away, how does it make you feel? Yours is crappy too, okay. But it's sad. And I'm lonely. And I'm hurt. And I've been left. And sometimes you feel abandoned. And sometimes you just feel horrible and rotten and terrible. Whenever you're having those feelings, brothers and sisters, what you got to know is what? Your agency's gone. Unless you're choosing to have them. And there's some people that choose. And what I'm going to teach you here in a minute is that I want you to choose to have those feelings for a time. Because they're normal and they're natural and you need to have them. So, now you recognize my agency's gone, we're going to go to step two. Step two is very, very powerful if you'll use it. And you have to use it a number of times before it then becomes second nature. Step two says, literally choose how long you want to feel that way. President Hinckley said over and over again in his talks, we can't choose what happens to us, but we can choose how it affects us. The little guy, and I can't remember his name, the little Jewish doctor, the psychiatrist that went through the horrors of World War II, Viktor Frankl, he was the one that coined the thought that said, we can't stop people from doing that, but we can choose how we allow it to affect us. It's a choice. Going back to what the good brother that presented this morning realized what he said is truth. It's a choice that we have. It all begins with thoughts. So, under step two are 3 parts. A says, allow yourself to feel. I want you to feel. It's okay to have those feelings. Grieving is what kind of a process? It's a feeling process. You gotta feel. Allow it to come. I promise you that it will not kill you. Okay, there's some of you think that it might. It will not kill you. But now what it is that you're now allowing yourself to feel, and B, under that, of step two, says literally choose how long you want to feel that way. So now what it is I'm allowing myself to feel, and now I'm choosing how long the feeling is. Yes, Gary.
Just a question. If you decide to cut that short because you don't want to feel that way, but you cut it short, will your body just maybe make you feel that way anyway?
Okay, only as long as you allow it to. Only as long as you allow it to. And that's the interesting part, is that when you literally learn how to do what I'm doing, your body and your mind will only do what you're saying it's going to do. It's an amazing thing. That it's a transformation of how your thoughts will then control your feelings. And I'm encouraging you now, because you're going to have those, and they're going to happen over and over and over again. And in the beginning stages of your grieving, you're going to have that 20, 30 times a day. Okay, as you go down the road, what you'll learn is that you'll have them once or twice a day. And then after the second year, you're going to find that they're not going to be once or twice a day anymore. You might have them once or twice a week. Okay? And when they come, you do what? Allow it, but choose how long I want to feel that way. Okay? So B then says, literally choose how long I want to feel that way. And C under step two says it has to be in real time. Okay, real time comes in minutes, hours, days, weeks, months, years, decades, and centuries. Now, the reason that we have it be in real time is because what we want you to do is have it be a segment of time that you can measure. Okay? So then you go to step three. Step three says, cut the time in half. Now here's the reason why. We live life on a spectrum. Okay? A spectrum of emotions. You cannot not have emotions. In our spectrum of time of emotions, you can go down this road right here and you can have 10,847 positives. And you can have a trigger go off, and in a fraction of a second, guess what it does? Boom! Just like that, it's gone. All your positives of the day is gone. You can go and you can have your little boy or your little girl, and they're out there having fun and you're having a good time and they've just won their game and you're cheering on, and you go home, and you have somebody drive by that looks just like, or their car looks like, or music comes on. Understand that that's gone now. All of the positives are gone. The negative side of the spectrum doesn't work that way. Okay, it's 7 times more powerful from what the research tells us. I'm not going to give it that much credit because I don't want to, and it doesn't fit with what I'm asking you to do anyway. So what I want you to do is realize that if you've got 15 minutes of break at work, okay, that means I can have 7.5 minutes of grief time. So you just cut the time in half to now 7.5 minutes. You've got 7.5 minutes coming. You got 7.5 minutes going back to neutral. And there's your 15 minutes of grief time. Okay, if you want to be sad or whatever for an hour, it's fine. If you want to be that way for 3 days, that's fine. Because guess what it now is? It's your choice. And when it becomes your choice, it becomes powerful. Okay? So if you want to have 3 days, then you're going to go and you're going to cut it down to 1.5 days. Make sense? Then you go to step four. Step four, I want you to put some stars by, please. Step four says you set a timer. Okay, I want you to go get your cell phone out. Is there anybody here that does not have a cell phone? Good. I want you to find the most obnoxious ringtone on your phone. Mine is an ooga horn. My wife is a siren. My son, who has a fancier phone than either one of us, he's got the little minions that go, Nino, Nino. You know, it just drives me nuts to hear that. I wish I had a fancy phone like him. But what I want you to do is I want you to find the most obnoxious ringtone for 2 reasons. Number one, there's a concept that you learned back in junior high school that says when an object is in motion, it will remain in motion until something of equal or greater value stops it. Your mind is an object in motion, and guess where it's headed? When it's thinking those thoughts, it's thinking negative thoughts, and it will keep on thinking those thoughts until something of an equal or greater value stops it. The ringtone now becomes the cue, just like when you make cookies or cake or roast or turkey. It's that bell that goes off that says you're done. And over a short period of time, because it's the most obnoxious ringtone, it now becomes Pavlov's bell that conditions your mind that when it goes off, guess what happens to your brain? It stops. It is the weirdest thing in the world, but we do know that Pavlov proved that we have conditioned responses. Okay? In about 15 minutes, they're going to ring the dinner bell, and guess where everybody's going to do? Whether I'm standing here talking or not, you'll stand up and you'll march like a herd of cows over to the lunch line, and we'll stand in line, and guess what will begin to happen with the natural juices of your lips, okay? You're going to do that, but it does the same thing. It stops, and it becomes the conditioner that conditions your mind to say, I'm done, okay? You're going to have to understand that 20, 30 minutes later, those of you that are in the very beginnings, you're going to have another cue go or a trigger go off, and you'll have to do it again. But again, we're doing it in short increments of time. Okay, then we go to step five. Step five says, think a totally different positive thought. Now, here's the hard part. The hard part here, brothers and sisters, is I want you to know that after your spouse had passed away, 3 weeks after, so you're just barely right there, you're not thinking any new thoughts. Guess what you're thinking? You're thinking the same thoughts over again. And how does it make you feel when you think the thoughts? Sad. Lonely. Tomorrow when you think the thoughts, how will it make you feel? Sad and lonely. And next month when you think the thoughts, how will it make you feel? Sad and lonely. And next year when you think the thoughts, how will it make you feel? Realize you can't have positives come from negative thoughts. What we do know, though, that the human mind doesn't want to be negative, that most human minds want to be positive. And what we do know is after about 2 years, those thoughts that you think of your spouse will switch and you'll start to have more positive thoughts. Okay? And unless there's some extreme situations, and suicide is one of those, that we sometimes have a tough time thinking the positive thoughts even 3 and 4 years out because of the negativity of suicide. But it is one of those things, brothers and sisters, that your mind now, as we teach it, guess what it will do? So step number 5 says, think a totally different positive thought. Now, I want to tell you just a little story, because I was working in doing grief work with a little 8-year-old boy. His name was Jake. Okay, and he taught me the concept that I just taught you. Because in the old days, what I used to try to do is I used to try to get people to think about positive things with them and their spouses and with them and their parents and with them and the people that passed away. And it wasn't working really good for me, just so you know. And that day, as Jake come in, and let me tell you the story. Little Jake, him and his dad, I got to sit down. Hold on just a second. Him and his dad were best buddies. Jake was 8 years old, and on one Saturday morning, Jake got up, and dad was there, and him and his dad made some pancakes, and his dad made pancakes every Saturday morning because that was the morning that dad was home. And they got up, they had pancakes after pancakes, they went in, they watched cartoons for a little while, and then dad said to Jake, "Jake, I'm going to go for a bike ride. I'll see you in a couple hours." And so dad went out in the garage, got on his bike, and rode off. 45 minutes later, there's a knock on the door, and there was a highway patrolman there telling his mother that her husband was killed in an automobile accident. Her husband, Jake's dad, literally ran through a red light and was hit by a cement truck and dump truck. He didn't survive. Now, little Jake was OCD, okay? His mind would not let go of his dad dying. And in his mind, what he believed is that if my father or anybody that I love leaves me, they're going to get killed. And he couldn't let his mother out of his sight. He slept with his mother. He went everywhere his mother went. When his mother went into the bathroom, she wouldn't let him go in. But if it wasn't a big hurry and she wasn't in enough time, he would knock on the door, "You done yet? You done yet? You done yet? You done yet?" And he would go like that until she came out. She'd get in the shower in the morning, and he would time how long she could shower. And if it wasn't enough time, he would go in and start knocking on the door. "You okay? You okay? You okay? You okay?" And driving her nuts. Okay, he then began to believe that anybody that rode bicycles was going to die. And he stole a pocket knife from his grandfather, and every time he saw a bicycle with somebody not on it and nobody around, he would go over and he'd puncture the tire. He got in big trouble for that one. Okay, school started. Summer ended and school began. And his mother would take him to school. She'd drop him off. Before she could get home, her cell phone would ring. And it would be the principal saying, "Little Jake's all curled up in a ball and he's screaming and he's throwing fits and he won't let us talk to him. You got to come get him." And after doing that for 5 days in a row, the principal finally said, "You need to go get Chris some help, or Jake some help." So that's where I got involved. And I taught little Jake the same thing that I'm teaching you, with an exception back then. Instead of saying, "Go home and think of positive thoughts about your dad," I said to Jake, I said, "Jake, I want you to go home and I want you to think about good things. I want you to think about the favorite things that you like the most." Now, They couldn't get back to see me for 10 days. They came back 10 days later. The mother came in and she was carrying brownies and cookies. Mormon mothers do that. I don't know what it is, but she came in and she set them down on the counter of my receptionist's desk, and then she went over and gave me a big hug, which embarrassed me. And she says, "You've saved my life." And I said, "Well, what's happened?" She says, "Jake's better. He's sleeping in his own bed. He's going to school every day. He's going to his primary class again. Everything is good. He's better." And I'm thinking, nobody gets better in one visit. And so I bring him into the office and I set him down. And I said, "Jake, what are you doing?" Now, little OCD kids are very obedient. And he says, "Mr. Allen, I'm doing what you told me to do." And I says, "What's that?" He says, "You told me to go home and think about things that I like." And I says, "Well, what are you thinking about?" He said, "Hamburgers." "You're thinking about hamburgers?" "Oh, I like hamburgers." And he's telling me about hamburgers. And I says, "Well, is that all you've been thinking about is hamburgers?" He says, "No, that's not my favorite thing to think about. I like to fish. Me and Grandpa, we go fishing every day, every week." And he started telling me about fishing. And then he got around to telling me they have contests. And whoever caught the biggest fish or the most fish would win the contest. And I says, "Well, do you ever win the contest?" And he says, "Every time. I'm the best fisherman." And then I says, "Well, what do you win when you win the contest?" He says, "Grandpa takes me anywhere I want to eat." And I says, "Then you go to your favorite hamburger place?" "Hamburgers aren't my favorite food. I like pizza." And then he started telling me about pizza. But what I want you to focus on here, brothers and sisters, is what was Jake thinking about? He was thinking about hamburgers, and he's thinking about fishing, and he's thinking about pizza. He wasn't thinking about his father passing away. He wasn't thinking about his father getting killed. He wasn't worrying about his mother dying in some weird accident because she left him. He was thinking of positive things. For you, as you think about positive things that are not related to your husband or your wife, it gives your mind a chance to breathe. It gives your body a chance to relax, and you heal from the trauma that you've gone through. It'll prepare you for the next time a trigger goes off. And it'll prepare you for the next time a trigger after that goes off. And so instead of being tired, and instead of being hurt, and instead of being in pain all the time, what you're doing is you're limiting your pain to small amounts, small moments. Now, the next part of the formula says then, okay, step six says, as soon as you can, do something different. And it's in the doing. It's in the doing.
One question that I'm confused on. Mm-hmm. When you say the 7.5 minutes, so is it crying, being negative?
Yep, for 7.5 minutes.
Okay, so I'm 7.5 back. Is that the positive thinking?
That's the positive thoughts. Mm-hmm. Nope, no positive thoughts about death. It's a totally different positive thought.
Okay, it just looks like the timer should be number 5 then.
Nope. Because the timer goes off, and now we change the thoughts. So what you do now...
Okay, so the timer's after 7.5, not 15.
Right, so now let me share how it works, okay? A couple of years ago, I had a lady who, their family went on a little trip down, they were floating down the Weber River, if anybody knows where the Weber River is. They were floating it in tubes. And the mom and one son had his tubes tied together, and the dad and one son had his tubes tied together. And anyway, the mother and the one son was about 300 yards ahead of the other father and the other son. And as the father and the younger son come around this bend in the river, they hit a tree that was leaning over the river. Now, what nobody really thought about was this father has asthma. And as they hit the tree, the dirt and the dust came down on top of him, and he couldn't breathe. And he stood up thinking the river wasn't very deep, and in that point of the river actually was about 10 feet deep. And he went down under the water and, gasping for breath, basically come up, passed out, and he's now floating down the river. The mother and the other son down the river, okay, they stopped at a sandbar waiting for them to come, and here comes the little 8-year-old boy pulling dad by the shirt of his neck down the river because he wasn't big enough to roll his dad over. The sad part about it is that dad passed away, drowned in the river. Okay, with this little family, as I worked with them, there was two other daughters and another son that wasn't part of the little trip down the river, and they needed to have some closure. The little boys were having a tough time driving across the river bridge every day to go to school. And so we all went to the river. I got permission from the landowner because I knew who he was, and we cut the tree down with a chainsaw. This big old tree in the river, and then we pushed this, put this great big wreath of flowers on the tree, and we sent it down the river. I'm sure the dam man didn't really care for me, but we sent it on down the river. Okay? But as I got done with that, it was painful for me. I spent about 3.5 hours, and I recognized as I'm driving home it's not working. So what I did is I said, how much time is this worth in my head? And what I said is an hour. I want to spend an hour working through it in my own mind and feeling bad and feeling sad for this little family. I set my timer for the next 30 minutes of my drive headed towards home, realized that what I was doing is I was processing, I was thinking, I was feeling, I was crying. The timer went off, okay, and I had to change my thoughts. Okay, I knew what I was doing because I practiced, and we're going to show you how to do that here right now, but I immediately put in some music that I enjoy. I had about 15 more minutes to get home, and as I'm on my way home, I'm listening to that music. In my valley, as I dropped over into my valley, I drove around the valley for another 15 minutes, so I didn't go home immediately, because what I wanted to do is I wanted to be in a positive mode when I got to my house. Okay, when I got to my home, what I did is I called my wife, not too many miles from home, and I said, honey, would it be okay if we go to dinner and a movie because I've got to get my head in a better place? Does that make sense? So that's number 6, is you do something different. Now, what happens to us, and I've got 5 minutes, so we're going to have to go really fast because the bell, dinner bell's going to ring, and then you're just going to salivate all over, and we don't want you to have drool marks when you go in. Okay, so what you do now is we go to step 6. Okay, I'm a very good artist. Very bad artist, okay? Now, for those that have never been in this class before, do you guys, oops, wrong thing. Anybody know what that is? No, it's a reservoir. It's a dam. That's a reservoir. Okay, and this is the dam man's house, and the dam man lives in the dam house. Okay, and there he is. He's even got a hat on. All right. Now, I live up on the reservoir of Pine View. If anybody's been up to Pine View Dam or Reservoir, that's where I live. And the dam man lives in our ward. That's what my kids used to call him, is the dam man. They found out that he controlled the waterfall at the bottom of the canyon, then they started calling him the waterfall fairy, and he didn't like that. He says, call me the dam man. But what I want to do is I want you guys to compare yourself to that reservoir. Realize that for most of you, there's your reservoir level. You got to recognize and see where your level is. There's some of you here today that are nothing more than this little puddle down at the bottom. Okay? In everybody's life, you have stress. There's no way to eliminate your stress. Sometime before the day is done and the night before you say your prayers and crawl into bed, I'd really like you to go into your life, and I'd like you to identify the drains in your life. Okay, it could be money, it could be loneliness, it could be children, it could be, you know, having to do things that you didn't know how to do. A lot of people, if your spouse was the one taking care of the business and the money, now I've got to learn how to do that. If you women out there, your husband was the one that was taking care of your cars and putting gas and doing all the fixing, you're going to have to do that. And what I want you to do is I want you to identify what your drains are so that you know what they are, but I also want you to know that you can't eliminate them. What I find is you eliminate one, you get 4 more. So I don't try to eliminate my stresses because I don't want 4 more. I'm just kidding. But what you do is you got to realize, excuse me, that what we need to do is we need to put fillers to fill my reservoir. Okay, in my reservoir, it's really, really interesting. We get a little bit, maybe an inch or two in that reservoir every year because of snow and rain that actually fall in it. Not a whole lot. We get a bunch more because of water that is flowing down the rivers in the springtime and the rivers come in and they fill the reservoirs. But the major place that our reservoir in Pineview gets its water is artesian wells that are underneath the reservoir. In other words, the mountain, the water flows down into the mountains and it comes up in the aquifers and it pushes in to somewhere around 35,000 gallons a minute into Pineview Reservoir. A lot of people didn't know that, but it's amazing. But we have multiple ways to fill the reservoir. In your lives, you have to have multiple ways to fill your reservoir. And what happens now is that in your life, because of your spouse going away and being deceased, you stop doing the things that used to make you feel good. Did you realize that? Okay, one of the things that I find most often, especially with an LDS population, is that church, which was one thing that used to make me feel good, now is the worst thing in my day of my week. Because now I'm going into life, and I don't get to go in with a spouse, and everybody else does, and now it makes me feel bad. Okay? And so what I'm saying is that you've got to add things into your life to fill your reservoir. Now, we've only got minutes because we've only got 1 minute left, and then we've got to be done, but I'm going to give you 3 minutes instead. Okay? Just really, really quick. If you had 5 minutes time, that's all. Just 5 minutes to do anything you wanted to do, what would you do to help yourself feel better? Scream. It's okay. I like it. Just call the neighbors. They'll think something's wrong if they do. But screaming, yes. Sing. Music is a wonderful one. You got to be careful with music because some songs make us feel good. Others are a stress and they drain us. Okay, others, yes. Read, listen to a book on tape. Great. Others?
Crying.
It helps.
Dance.
Take a shower. Can you shower in 5 minutes? And if you have to, you might want to save that one to the 15 minute or an hour. Well, maybe not an hour. Yep, there's times. So as you look down that list, what I want you to do, brothers and sisters, is I literally want you to go in, and we only put those small for you because we want you to go in. And I want you to make lists. I want you to take your cell phone out. And on all of your cell phones, I want you to put the lists in your cell phone. You have this little place called Notes. Go in there and put it in. I have 13 pages of notes that I can do things in those amount of times. The reason that I want you to write it down and put it there, because most of my time, and you guys may be different, but most of my time comes in 10-minute increments, 15-minute increments. Very rarely do I have a day. Okay, sometimes I have an evening. It doesn't come in big lumps of time for me. You guys may be different. But as you write those things down and you now say, okay, I'm feeling bad, I want to feel better, what can I do? And then what you do is you click that in, you go down your list and say, oh, I can pet my dog. Oh, I can get a hug off my child. Oh, I can text my best friend. Oh, I can go into Pinterest. I'm not a Pinterest person, but I know there's somebody in here that is. I can do Facebook, okay? What you're doing is you're finding that time that you can go in, and now guess what happens to your life? We start to what? We start to fill it up. And when your reservoir is fuller, guess what I know you can handle? Okay, what I know you can do is handle life, and you can handle stress. Okay, your thoughts will lead to actions. Okay, in my last class, we're going to talk about prayer. I teach you about faith. Your thought leads to actions. Your fillers are your actions. Okay, and it makes you feel better. You start to do better because now my reservoir is full instead of empty and drained all the time. Yes.
This is a lifetime thing, right? This is not just for
reading. No, this is a lifetime thing. I use what I'm teaching you here today in every aspect of my life. Okay, this morning, okay, I got up early because I know that if I don't have energy, that you guys get nothing, and I want you to have everything that I've got. I got up this morning, I read my scriptures, and I said my prayers, and then I went on a 5-mile hike because guess what I know I like? I like being outside, I like walking, I like hiking. I didn't hike in the mountains, I just wandered around. Almost got lost. Okay, but you got to do. You got to fill your reservoirs. Any questions?